Welcome to Circuit Break from Macrofab, a weekly show about all things engineering, DIY projects, manufacturing, industry news, quote wizards. I wonder if we'll have like quote fighters and quote barbarians, Dutch fried foods, and prototyping. We're your hosts, electrical engineers Parker Dolman
and Stephen Craig.
This is episode 422. Circuit Break from Macrofab. Hey, Circuit Breakers, we have an announcement. We're running an electronic design contest on our community forums. The theme is food devices. Go to forum.macrofab.com to find out more information about the contest and how to enter. For prizes, there is over $5,000 in cash, free prototyping services to Macrofab, and the most important thing, trophies to show that your design was one of the best entered. There's a link in the show notes of where to find more information about this contest and how to enter. And thank you to Mauser Electronics for sponsoring the contest. So yeah, quote wizards. So we have a new...
What's a quote wizard?
So we have different wizards, right?
Yeah.
There's like the typical Dungeons & Dragons wizard. There's like the Harry Potter... I guess it's kind of like vampires in a way too. But anyways, we have the Harry Potter style wizards.
Yep.
And then we have software wizards.
Well, okay. I'm a little bit curious about this because the idea of a wizard was like, that's a thing back in the 90s. Like everything had a wizard where it's like, you could either set this whole whatever software up yourself or you could run the wizard. I really haven't seen that in a long time. So Macrofab seems to be bringing wizards back. So what is a quote wizard?
So the quote wizard is a new feature of our platform that basically allows you to get a quote and actually order and start placing your order when you don't 100% have your hard data done about your PCB. Because most time you, especially when you first start doing your product, you do have like the board's going to be this big, it's going to be this many layers, it's going to use these components, etc. But you still haven't finished all the routing and all that stuff yet. And a lot of times you still need to figure out like, what is your ballpark price? So you can go tell your manager, you know, it's going to cost this much. So what this allows you to do is actually get ahead and configure your PCB specific, basically be able to quote on specifications instead of having your hard data done.
Mm.
And it also allows you to get ahead of your component sourcing. So if you know you need to use this specific STM32, you can go, hey, I'm going to use 100 of these. Let's go ahead and get this order ready and going and then get the supply chain rolling. And then that way, when you actually do have your design files all the way done, you can go ahead and submit them to the, you know, into the process. And we're actually going to have Kyle McLeod and Nicholas. Oh, what is Nicholas's last name? I got to look it up real quick. They're going to be on the podcast the next couple of weeks to talk about this release.
Very cool. So it allows you to incompletely quote your project and get that information sooner, get it earlier on.
Correct. Yeah.
And that seems a little bit like, why would you do that? Getting that information earlier on is so important for a project. I can't tell you how often I'm asked to go get a ROM, R-O-M, which is rough order of magnitude, because my manager or my manager's manager or the project manager, they just want to know, if we go do XYZ, is it going to cost $10,000? Is it going to cost $100,000? Is it going to cost $1,000,000? Like, where does it fit in this? Because there's a lot of things we do that people might have a gut feel for how much it cost. Maybe. Who knows? And so I can see this being incredibly useful, especially when your manager's like, I need to know how much this cost in an hour because I'm giving a presentation on it. And you're like, oh my God, I got to go get this number right now.
Yeah. So the quote wizard allows you to do that. I actually was looking at it a couple of days ago. I was really hoping it would have like the install wizard from like back from 2004.
With like the clip art wizard.
Yes. The clip art wizard.
That's on the side. Yeah.
Unfortunately, he doesn't.
Which, by the way, I have to bring this up. I went to Wikipedia and there is a Wikipedia page for a software wizard. And I want to read this because this is the genesis of the software wizard. So before the 1990s, wizard, in air quotes, was a common term for a technical expert, comparable to a hacker. So the 1985 textbook, Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs, was nicknamed the Wizard Book for the illustration on its cover. its first chapter says a computational process is indeed much like a sorcerer's idea of a spirit. So the entire idea of a wizard in software came from the cover of a textbook from 1985. Well, and the idea that somebody who knows what they're doing and steps you through the process could be considered a wizard.
So yeah, sign up, try out the new Quote Wizard, and let us know in our community forum, forum.macrofab.com. And speaking of forum.macrofab.com, we also are running a contest. Macrofab Food Device Design Derby contest sponsored by Macrofab and Mauser. So yeah, if you go to forum.macrofab.com, there is a contest link. Submit your food designs. We're going to be running that contest to the end of March. We have our first entry to it. It's Victor from the Netherlands has submitted a contest entry, I guess. And it's a pocket air fryer,
which is kind of awesome.
This is really awesome. And I love how there's like background on like why a pocket air fryer is super important to him. And apparently like frying foods is like a big deal in the Netherlands, which I never thought of.
Yeah, Victor was saying virtually every home has a fryer of some sort. And on top of like a traditional fryer with oil, they also have air fryers.
Mm-hmm. And so there's some food like a bitterballen, I think that's how I'm pronouncing that right, which is a deep fried meatball, which looks awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then a frikandellen, which is like a deep fried hot dog. It's kind of like a corn dog almost.
Okay.
But not on a stick.
Oh, so just the dog.
Yeah, it's just the dog deep fried. I think it uses thinner batter because like a corn dog has got like that really thick corn batter on it. This is thinner.
Yeah, there's as much corn as there is dog in a corn dog.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this has onions and cheese on it too? Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, it looks great. When I was reading this entry, I was getting really, really, really hungry.
That's going to be a problem with judging. Like,
yeah.
We cannot judge on an empty stomach.
Yeah. But the description is, it's a compact portable device to fry snacks on the go. Perfect for quick fried snacks anytime, anywhere.
Nice.
I'm a big fan of this. Victor, if you've never heard of the Texas State Fair, you need to go. It sounds like every person from Netherlands' like greatest dream to go to the Texas State Fair, where everything is deep fried.
Oh my gosh. Well, think about that. Like, okay, you could have an interactive Texas State Fair where at your entry, you get one of Victor's pocket fryer and you just visit booths and they just load you up and you fry as you walk to the next booth.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And walk. I kind of like that idea. I like how this is sort of a hot air rework station cooker in a way.
It's a hot air gun with a tube on the end.
Yeah, with a tube. Yeah. I think it's brilliant. Which, okay, so air fryers. I don't have an air fryer standalone unit, but I bought an oven, a new oven, because ours was like 30 years old or whatever. And it comes with an air fryer, they say, in it. But I was trying to investigate, like, what makes an air fryer and what makes a convection oven a convection oven? Because what I was aware of is an air fryer moves around hot air, but so does a convection oven. So what makes it an air fryer of what my research is, a convection oven turns PWM's the fan. So it moves the air for a period of time and then stops, and it will kick on and off periodically. An air fryer just constantly blows hot air.
Yeah, I view it as like there's like a cutoff between convection oven and airflow. And when the airflow becomes so much, it becomes air fryer territory.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But the Venn diagram of the two overlaps a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the oven manufacturers were like way into the air fryer thing because they're like, oh my God, all we have to do is turn on our fan full duty cycle, and we have a whole new mode that has like a buzzword behind it.
Yeah. I will say is because I have an actual air fryer at home.
Yeah.
And it's fan. So that air fryer is like the size of, it's like a microwave size.
Okay.
Actually, it's a little smaller than a microwave.
Yeah. Microwaves are actually kind of big.
Yeah. So it's a little smaller than a microwave. Its convection fan is 4 times bigger than the convection fan that's in my standalone oven.
Okay, yeah.
So it is much larger. It's a big fan. above the coils, basically. Because, you know, in Toast 7, you have the coils on top and bottom. So it has this huge fan that's on top of those coils. Whereas in the convection oven, there's like a little dinky fan in the back, basically, that kind of moves air and
kind of just mixes things up.
Mixes it up a bit. And actually, I don't like using it at all in the convection. It doesn't seem to really work too well.
Hmm. Convection is supposed to reduce your cook time by, I don't know, 20% or something like that. Hmm. But air fryer is just a bombardment of hot air.
Yeah.
Like directly on the, and continuous.
It makes really, really good. I'll share my recipe for really good French fries in an air fryer.
Ah.
So you take your potato. I actually made these with carrots once and it was really good. But you take a potato and you have to slice it really thin. Like I'm talking like McDonald's style.
See-through.
Thin. So like what that would be like 3/16 of an inch or something like that. What, 2 or 3 millimeters?
Yeah.
Very thin slices. And then put the slices in a bowl. Right. And put toasted sesame seed oil on the French fries or on the potatoes. And then salt and pepper. That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
You might want to put a little Tony's maybe in there or a little bit of a cayenne if you want a little kick to it. But salt and pepper, mix that up, and then put it in the basket that the air fryer comes with. And then it's 425 degrees for 20 minutes baking. So not even with the air fryer. And then the last 5 minutes, 425.
Just nuke it.
With the air fryer on. And that will crisp up the outside and actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not perfectly like deep frying, but it's so close that I'm like, this is good enough.
Right, right.
You can get your French fry fix.
Yeah, and it doesn't come along with all the calories from the oil.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is spawning something now. Okay, I'm going to start a thread on our Circuit Break community that's just our like favorite recipes. I've got 2 or 3 that I'll throw up there, but let's start a thread that's just a food related thread. That's just, here's engineers' favorite recipes.
Do you think at the end of the year we can have like the Circuit Break podcast recipe book for engineers?
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, let's do it.
Where we can compile everything together.
Okay, so I'll start a thread and I'll throw some of my favorite stuff or recipes that I have generated or perfected. And let's just get people putting good food in there.
All right, so the first big topic of the podcast, I would say about 4 or 5 weeks ago at this point, I mentioned I was switching over to KiCad from Eagle.
Yeah, yeah. How's that been going?
So first I'll say why. Because there's been some people asking me, why are you switching, stuff like that. And we actually kind of talked about this. KiCad's got a lot of third-party tools being written for it. It's a very popular tool, and it's open, and so it's very easy to write tools for. And so that was one reason. Eagle, no one's made new tools for Eagle since basically Autodesk bought CADsoft out. Mm-hmm. And also, one of the design groups I'm with uses KiCad. And so it's been really weird because they would be like, hey, Parker, we need you to design something. So I would design it in Eagle, get the board built, and be like, okay, now take the design files and implement it in KiCad, guys. Which, not a very good workflow.
No, you want to avoid that as much as possible. Translation, I've never seen it go smoothly.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say, like, never seen it go well. Like, it just doesn't. We've been doing some of that at work to actually translate from Eagle to a different program. And a thing that always seems like it should take a day or two ends up taking 2 weeks of just cleaning up mess.
Yeah. So I had to learn KiCad just from that alone.
Sure.
So I was like, hey, let me, and I was going to start from the ground up too. I was like, hey, I got a new circuit that I need to implement on our design. And I need to design new parts. So I'm going to make a new library and build new parts. And actually, it went okay for a little bit. My previous use of KiCad was just running like DRC and fixing DFM issues and exporting manufacturing files. So I never really routed a board. I've moved stuff around and that kind of stuff I've done before, just never actually built a board with it.
The basics, basically.
Yeah, the basics. And so, and I've also...
Actually, I got a question for you. So the thing is, I wouldn't call you a diehard Eagle fan because I don't think that you're like proselytizing for Eagle. You've done that in the past. You're just very comfortable with it and you're quick with it. And that's understandable. Now, the thing is, you adopted Fusion 360 and that kind of family of 3D design. And there's a lot of really fantastic stuff with it. I thought you were going to be super duper excited when they were like, we're marrying Eagle and Fusion 360. So I'm curious, what about it has kind of turned you away? Because from what I've seen, it just seems to be Eagle wrapped up in the Fusion, you know, wrapper.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. The problem I'm running into, by the way, so like even with my, let's like ignore my group stuff. So this is just my own personal stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's getting harder to share Eagle designs. And especially after once Eagle standalone goes away, then you have to have Fusion. So you have to have a subscription now to even view files from Eagle, or I think it's called Autodesk Electronics. So it's really hard to share designs. And that's something I do a lot. I'm not going to use the word open source hardware, because there's a whole other baggage that comes with saying that you're open source hardware. But I like sharing my designs and I like seeing other people's designs. And it's going to be basically once Eagle goes away as standalone, it's going to be really hard to share that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually don't even know if it would be impossible to share in the Autodesk environment in Fusion. That was one of the reasons why I'm looking for alternatives for my own personal use. And my other group that I do stuff with, let's just say Anna Exor, the Badge Life group, we use KiCad internally. So I'm like, well, I got to learn KiCad anyways. Let's see if it's going to be good enough for taking over all my other personal project stuff. And it's also open source, and it's very easy to share KiCad files. And the MacRed platform supports KiCad natively. You just drop the KiCad file in there, and it does all the magic. Which is going to be very interesting how we're going to make that work in Eagle for Autodesk. Don't know yet.
It may be very difficult going forward. Autodesk doesn't tend to play nice with others.
It likes to keep everything in the cloud.
Yes.
So it's going to be very interesting when you don't have a save file. How do you get the raw EDA tool file? Anyways, that's something to figure out in like 3 years when Eagle goes away.
We'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, exactly. So also, I've so far in KiCad, beyond my past experience, I've only been doing library stuff, designing parts like symbols and footprints.
You haven't touched the board yet.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten to schematic and layout yet, because I'm starting from the bottom and building up my knowledge all the way up. And
that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, and that's how I did Eagle. That's how I started learning Altium. That's how I did Altium too. So I think it's a really good way to do it. And it's what we said too on previous episodes of the podcast. We electrical engineers don't, especially hardware layout people, we don't trust other people's footprints. So you have to go design your stuff anyways. And I could import my Eagle libraries. I'm not doing that. I'm just starting over from scratch.
Oh, that's actually an option with KiCad?
Yeah, you can import Eagle stuff natively,
yeah,
which is kind of cool.
I kind of relish the idea of being able to start a library over, because I have years and years of parts
and bad decisions
that are actually broken up into different libraries. And there's just something nice about cleaving it all off and saying, like, this is my new perfect library.
Yeah.
And then immediately screwing it up. Right?
So this is my third time starting over my library, because I guess technically four time, but the first one was like free PCB, which doesn't really count.
Nah, let's not count.
But Eagle, I've started twice. I guess three times if you count the MacroFab libraries, but the MacroFab libraries kind of like are in parallel with my second start of Eagle. Anyways, so I was designing a symbol for a lithium battery charger. That's a boost charger. So it's designed to boost 5 volts from like USB, for example, up to 7.4, actually more like 8.2 volts, to charge two cells in parallel series.
Mm-hmm.
And then it handles like charge current and all that
stuff. The load sharing or that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sharing the bus and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty cool chip. And so I designed the symbol, and the first kind of gotcha that I ran across with KiCad, and by the way, I've been publicly saying this stuff on Twitter too, and have a lot of responses and a lot of good talks about ways around these problems, what the community does and that kind of stuff. So it's been great so far. But there is not a, what I would call not a proper way to pair a single symbol pin to multiple pads on a footprint. So like, let's say you have a component that has a couple ground pins, and then your symbol, you just want one ground pin on your symbol to, that basically links those nets together on all those pads. Well, you can't do that.
It's one-to-one?
It's one-to-one.
Like, it's strictly one-to-one?
Yeah, it's strictly one-to-one. So in like, I'm just going to say the, every other EDA tool I've used, barring FreePCB, because FreePCB didn't have symbols because there was no schematic editor, there's a way to say this one pin goes through these four pads, for example. That's something that DipTrace does. That's something that Eagle does. That's something that Altium does. That's something that Cadence does. It's like a device layer, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
KiCad doesn't have a device layer. I'm going to put that in quotes, though, because it does, but it's not in the main KiCad stuff. It's kind of weird. We'll get to it.
Okay.
But so there's workarounds for the symbol pin to pad thing. One is what I did back in FreePCB was you would have just like, because you would have to write your net list manually. You just had just all your pins. So it's the same way in KiCad. You would just have four ground pins in your symbol.
And then you just have to draw them all on the schematic.
Yeah, draw them all on the schematic. And then they would just net over to your four pads, which that works. That's a very old school way of doing it. Mm. And I'm like, I guess that's probably the most correct way of doing it in KiCad.
Perhaps it doesn't, how do I say this? It doesn't leave room for error because you have to define everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really do make a mistake, that's on you. And there's no assumptions because you have to connect everything.
Yeah.
It's interesting. In the software we use at work, which is Siemens Expedition, to my knowledge, it actually generally does the same thing. I think there's ways around it, but by default, what we're seeing is it doesn't. And so we actually have some transistor packages we're using that are like, I don't remember, 30 pins or something like that. And there's two pins that are the gate, and then the source and the drain each have a bazillion pins, and they're just drawn as these huge long trees of things that you have to connect to. And it grinds my gears because it makes our schematics look terrible, because there's these packages that look really stupid with a ton of pins on them, and it's like, all of these pins are the exact same thing on the die, but it doesn't leave room for error because it means you have to connect every single one of them. And there's really good reason, because if we didn't connect those, we'd run into thermal issues or we'd run into current issues or blah, blah, blah. So I get it, but it does lead to potentially much larger symbols on your schematic than is necessary.
Yeah, I would say it makes schematics really hard to read.
Yeah.
And yeah, it blows up components that should be simple to define on a schematic to make them not simple.
Right.
Now there's two alternatives. One is you basically take all those ground pins, so they still exist. You make all of them but one invisible, so you can't see the other pins.
Okay.
And you stack them all together, so they're all on one point.
Ooh.
And when you net them together in your symbol, in your schematic, it will connect them all.
I really don't like that. And one of the reasons why is there's so much assumptions in what you just said, that first of all, that you did it right the first time, that you made all the right ones imaginary or invisible, you put them all in the right place, and then you're just assuming that if you connect to the one magic one that is visible, then it just does connect to everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't trust that. Mm-mm.
So how this works is, since you don't have a device layer, you can't say pin one is pad one. You don't say that. You don't have this like device level that tells those two things are equal.
Okay.
What it does is it goes, oh, pin one on the schematic is pad one. Whatever is labeled pad one in the layout are those, it just assumes that those are equal. So 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. In the schematic side on the symbol, you can't have two pins that are both labeled 2 or 3 or 4.
Okay.
You can only have 1, 1, 1, 2.
Yeah, you're right.
But on the layout side, you can have whatever you want. So you can have 4 5s, for example.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's a workaround.
So what you would do is you'd have one pin that says it's ground.
Yeah, GND or whatever.
GND. And then all those pads on your layout, you could just say they're ground on the layout editor or the footprint editor. You can do it that way. The problem is now you can't reuse that footprint at all because it's specific to that symbol.
Right, yeah. Right. But you don't know that necessarily.
No, you don't.
Unless you know that.
Yes, unless and you know that.
I hate that.
Yeah. And so I went with the second one I'd said, which was stacking the pins and making them invisible.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what I went with. It's not a good solution. The first one is probably the correct way, which is you just list all those pins out and you just have to connect them all. But I'm so used to seeing it how Eagle and Altium and Diptrace allow you to do symbols. I'm like, I just couldn't do like 4 ground pins anymore. So,
okay. So with Diptrace, allows you to have one pin be connected to any number of pins on the actual footprint. So one symbol, any number of pins. But when you're creating a symbol in a footprint in Diptrace, you name all your pins and you name all your pads. And if you name them the same thing, like if this pin is ground and this pad is ground, Diptrace automatically thinks you want to connect those. But if you don't want to connect those, you can go in and actually break that connection. It's just, it makes a first assumption. Basically, oh, I have symbol pins 1 through 8 and pads 1 through 8. It just auto connects those. But if you want to connect a pin to multiple pads, you literally just draw the pin to the pad. You say, I want to connect to this. You drag your mouse over, connect to all of them, and then it's done. And it shows the connection for all of those.
So it has a device layer.
Correct.
Yeah, because that's how Eagle works, is there's a device layer.
It does an initial assumption, and 99% of the time it's right, because you name things, you know, how you want them to be connected. And then on the footprint, you name those pads how you want them to be connected. And most of the time, it's just numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And so it does a first assumption. And if that's not right, you just draw how you want it to be, and then you're done.
Yeah. And so this kind of laid down the path of, I was like, okay, so I got this component, this complicated IC done. And I'm like, I was pretty happy. I'm like, okay, I don't like the implementation of all these invisible pins on my schematic that hopefully...
But it does work.
But it does work. Then I was like, okay, now I need an inductor because it's a boost converter. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to draw my inductor symbol. So I drew a schematic symbol with little humps.
The little curly cues.
Little curly cue humps. And I'm like, I like that. That looks really nice. And I went and drew, it's a very specific inductor. I can't remember the brand, but you know, like none of them follow normal chip packages. They're always weird shapes and stuff, especially shielded ones.
Pac-Man pads or whatever.
Yeah, but so it's a really weird shape of a package. I drew that and I'm like, okay. So with the IC is you draw your symbol, save it, and then you go over and draw your footprint, save it, and then you go back to your schematic or your symbol. And you go, I want to basically point this symbol together. And it just, you just say this, when you use this symbol, it goes to this footprint. Boom, done. And I'm like, well, this is an inductor, generic inductor symbol. So what if I had an 0805 like ferrite bead, for example, and I wanted to use the same symbol? Because I should be able to use an Eagle. That's what I do. I just have the same symbol. You can't do that in KiCad.
Oh.
This idea of multiple packages per symbol isn't a thing. So you either have a very explicit one-to-one or basically none hooked up to it.
Huh. Okay.
And so what you do is when you drop let's say you had an inductor or a resistor, we'll just use the resistor because it's even easier. You have a resistor symbol and then you have 042, 0603, 0805, etc. footprints. Well, when you drop it, you don't have to immediately say what package it is. I think this is why they have it this way. So you don't have to think about what package it is. But a lot of times...
You're just drawing a schematic.
You're just drawing a schematic. But for me, I usually have in mind what specific component I'm going to use already.
Yeah.
I'm going to use this very specific inductor. So I need to define all that when I drop it on the schematic.
Right.
It does allow you to do that. I just think it's a little hokey of how that's disassociated, especially where, like, if this, say, this library started getting ginormous and you drop your inductor on, it will basically pull up and you open up the footprint list. It will pull up everything that's two pins for footprints.
Oh.
And now I have to go remember, wait, what inductor do I want to use? What's the footprint called? And I basically have to go through this ginormous list instead of this pre-selected list that are only inductor footprints. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, could you create your own library that's inductors and there's only inductors in there?
Yeah, you can separate all that out. I just like throwing all the passives in one.
Yeah.
That way for capacitors and resistors and chip inductors, they can all share 04, 02, 06, 03, et cetera.
Sure.
So there is a way to have this device layer style management in KiCad. It exists, but doesn't exist because it's not manageable in KiCad directly.
Okay.
How it works, according to their documentation, is you make a SQL database that has that information in it. And it doesn't, okay. The actual documentation, I bet you if you went deeper, tell you how to structure that SQL database, but the description doesn't tell you.
Okay.
So you basically have to have, I think there's probably a third party tool that does all that for you. I haven't looked it up yet because I probably won't use it. I'm probably just going to make my libraries more granular in structure so that when you need like a specific footprint, it's easier to find. But I started looking into other EDA tools because I have to learn KiCad anyways for my group that I do hardware with. But for my own personal stuff, my only stipulation is it's just easier to share designs, right?
Yeah.
And so I started looking around and we talked about this long, long, long time ago. Like I want to say 2017, LibrePCB. So LibrePCB actually hit like version 1.0 a couple months ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
So they have full release and full feature set. But I was reading some of their documentation and I saw this. This is a direct quote from their documentation about why their library structure is set up this way. By the way, like I saw their library structure and I'm like in love with how it's done. It's super explicit of like everything is linked together and formalized.
Mm-hmm.
But so this is what they said. Some EDA packages extract pin to pad assignments, pin outs, just by matching pin and pad names. However, this doesn't reflect the real world and is thus very error prone.
Ooh.
Often there is not even a clean way to create devices with an unusual pin out, such as a SOT23 transistor with a reversed pin out. And I was talking to a bunch of my friends, engineer friends in Discord about this, and they're like, I've been bitten by reverse packages in KiCad all the time.
Oh. Oh, yeah, because KiCad just makes the assumptions, yeah.
Makes the assumption right away, and you don't have this device layer to fix that problem.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a very interesting quote. I haven't tried LibrePCB at all yet. I've just been reading their documentation because I have to learn KiCad anyways for my group, and you can only learn one EDA tool to them at a time, so I can't do both right now. And so I'm learning KiCad right now. But I was thinking about this and more conversations on Twitter about KiCad. And I do think KiCad is in a really hard spot.
How so?
Because people have been using KiCad for a long time. And like, I think version 5 was like 9 years ago at this point. KiCad's been around for basically as long as Eagle has. And people have found workarounds. By the way, this is not a dig on KiCad. But this is just, KiCad has been around for so long, its deficiencies, so there's been workarounds for these deficiencies for a long, long time that have become basically the workflow for KiCad. Or I want to come up with something like lore, like it's like the software lore or the process lore
yeah.
of KiCad. And XKCD has a really good, if you like Google XKCD spacebar workflow, it's a comic strip. XKCD is a comic. I bet you like everyone that's listening to us is like, yes, we know what XKCD is. But that's a very good comic. That's basically what's going on with KiCad is you can't change workflows in KiCad because the moment you like, there'll be so much pushback on it. You can, that's why in KiCad, there's not really that much incentive to fix these old problems with the library management. And that's why, like, if you want to do device layer stuff, you can use an external tool. We're not going to change our internal tools to handle that. You can use an external tool to manage it, though, because they don't want to change those workflows specifically. That's why when you see these new KiCad releases, it's always new features, right? Like push-pull routing, and there's a whole bunch from KiCad 8 that actually James Lewis has a video on like his favorite 8 things in KiCad 8. Go check out that video. It's really good, actually, especially if you are on KiCad 7 and don't know why to switch to 8, go watch that video. It's great. But it's all new features. It's none of it is, oh yeah, we actually fixed this thing, this old workflow problem. Like no one's really interested in fixing those because they cause too much drama, I think.
I wonder though, if you are interpreting them as issues because you are coming in with a different perspective.
Oh, 100%.
You're coming in with the eagle mindset.
But I don't even think it's an eagle mindset because DipTrace does it. Like basically all the industry standard, I'm going to put in quotes, professional tools, unquote,
yeah,
have this device layer management for libraries to handle these weird packages, to handle, so also to allow you to reuse symbols and reuse footprints and verify and validate, like this whole idea of validating components. Not really a thing in KiCad. But it's something that's super important to the PCB design process when you're building prototypes up. And I just think it's something they won't be able to fix because of these workarounds are in place for so long that the moment you change it, it's going to basically piss off the people who use it because they have to go learn a new tool or learn a new workflow.
I hope people don't interpret this as a dig on any communities out there.
It's not my intent.
But the KiCad community is a very, shall we say, ardent and loud community in terms of the social media presence. They're just very vocal. And so if KiCad were to make changes, let's just put it this way, social media would be, people would know that these changes were made and it pissed off people.
I'll say this is when you're at like conferences and people ask you what EDA tool you use and you say Eagle, they look at you like you're wearing a MAGA hat.
Make EDA great again.
Yeah, that's mega.
Mega.
And so it's interesting because I'm going to bring up Libre PCB in that context again. When Libre PCB was announced, it was a comment. I wish I could find it. I searched for it and I couldn't find it. But there was a comment on Hacker News of, it was like a post by the person who started Libre, and he was just like, hey, here's my new project to build PCBs. We're going to take a library first approach and blah, 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 blah. And one of the top comments too was, why don't you just work on KiCad? Why don't you put your developer efforts towards KiCad? And I saw that. I'm like, what? Why are you complaining about him not working on this tool and working on some other tool? Like, I don't know. That plays into your community aspect, though, is it also goes towards when people ask, hey, what EDA tool should I learn if they're beginners? When people ask me that, I don't say Eagle at all because I know Eagle's being phased out and I know there's Eagle is a pay. And for me, like, if you're just starting out doing PCBs and you don't, if it's like a hobby, you shouldn't pay for the tool. There's plenty of free options out there.
Also, if you're getting into like the very beginnings of engineering and you haven't even touched drafting tools, do not go with Eagle because 100%. You will just be mad.
Yeah, you will
just be real mad.
Yeah, be really mad. And so everyone just defaults to KiCad because it's like the biggest free one out there.
And it has a ton of support and a lot of people talk about it.
And a lot of videos. I do think this is also this like meme of your first rev is never going to work. There's always problems with it.
Yeah, okay.
And what's interesting is I actually started looking at KiCad boards for that reason. And a lot of the reasons why they don't work is because they're missing a signal, which you can trace back to this problem of linking symbols and footprints together and something not being named correctly because there's no device layer to check it.
You know, maybe to counter that in a way, think about this. If this is your first foray into PCB design, then maybe being super, super duper explicit is actually a good thing because it forces you to say, this is my one symbol. This is my one footprint. And they only exist for each other, no one else. And I have to have one pin, one pad, all the way up and down. And it just forces you to be really explicit with everything. And maybe that's good for a beginner.
Yeah. I haven't tried it yet, though, but I want to see if, like, because I'm going to try Libre PC. Basically, once I learn KiCad and I'm working for this project, other project, I'm actually going to try Libre PCB for my own personal projects because it's free, open source. It would be easy to share projects again. And honestly, if that software is perfectly fine for building boards, that is probably what I'm going to start recommending.
Sure.
Because it has the super explicit device management layer for libraries. It's like, I'm going to have to invite him onto the podcast as a guest, but he has talks about how terrible library management is in EDA tools and how Libre PCB is designed to fix those things.
Huh.
So,
I'm looking at Libre PCB and it's very obvious that Eagle was a inspiration for this just because the way they display graphics on the screen, it just looks like Eagle.
Funny enough, it does do that. Now, I actually didn't make that connection until I saw there's like a board because it literally uses the Eagle red and blue.
Yeah, but like straight copy.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah. But that's not why I want to use it. It's just the library management looks really awesome. So I want to give it a fair shake. So we'll see. See what happens.
One thing I've run into more recently with talking with engineers who are a little bit younger than me, I've been personally hearing and running into people who seem to be more okay with using other people's symbols and footprints, almost to the point where they start to judge EDA tools based on, does it have libraries that are ready? I don't know what Barker and I have been over this a billion times. We make our own symbols. We make our own footprints. In my opinion, that's not like an extra boring thing you do. That is part of the process. It's just,
that's 90% of your process.
It is a requirement in the process. But I've heard more recently people being like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this project because I don't know if a library is available. And I've literally said to these people like, you know, you can make your own, right? And they're like, yeah, but, and I don't want it to sound like these people are lazy in any way. It's just a different mindset of looking at it. It's, is this thing already prepackaged? And I think their mindset is, how do I get to the end goal quicker? Or how do I get to it with fewer obstacles? And creating your own parts, I don't know, maybe there's a shift in the culture of PCB creation where that's seen as this extra burden or this extra step that, you know, a modern EDA tool shouldn't have.
Yeah, I wonder, we should run a poll in a discussion for this podcast episode on that.
Ah, yeah.
Is what's your view on designing your own parts? Do you look for libraries first? What's your trust level?
Yeah.
Are you willing to fall backwards into the arms of some random stranger on the internet with their footprint?
Right. Well, I guess there's also the idea that, take for instance, I'll just use DipTrace because I'm used to it. DipTrace has a very extensive pre-made library system. And in many cases, you can search for a part and go figure there's already a footprint made in it, but it's made by the DipTrace guys. It's made by the company. So it's not just some rando who threw something up onto GitHub and there's now just this library that you can't trust. It's literally done by someone who's paid to make those. So some people might see that as a big benefit of like, oh, okay, I could buy DipTrace because it comes prepackaged with all of these libraries. And maybe even if they do some research beforehand and say, oh, it comes prepackaged with these specific libraries that I know I'm going to need. Great, I'll buy DipTrace or whatever EDA tool. In my mind, I don't necessarily see that as a gigantic benefit, but perhaps there's that middle ground in terms of I make footprints versus, you know, I make footprints being the safest one versus just get some randos footprints that I haven't verified being the most unsafe. Perhaps there's something in between where it's like, okay, this EDA tool comes prepackaged with footprints. I have a higher trust level than just GitHub dude.
Yeah, and there's also services out there you can pay to get packages.
Correct. Yeah, actually, at work, we are technically, I say technically because there's some exceptions to the rules, but our engineering department is actually not allowed to make our own footprints and symbols. We do 100% of our components through a third party external. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
I know why.
Huh?
I know why, because now they're, it's like insurance. They're on the hook if it's messed up.
It's insurance. We do pay for them to be done correctly. And we have 8 engineers that would all draw symbols differently. So
that is a good point.
There's consistency and there's unity between all of our symbols.
That is a good point, is having a consistent.
So there's something valuable about that, right?
Yeah, having a consistent look. That's actually the funny thing is every single time I start over on my libraries is that's the reason why. It's like I look at like a part I designed 5 years ago and then look at a part now and be like, and basically I do that. I compare them and go, are they actually that much different? If the answer is yes, time to start over.
Yeah, because your personal standards have changed.
Changed, yeah. Well, we were going to talk about also stuff to add to your next prototype, but I think we'll skip that this week.
Let's save that one because that could be a whole topic of in and of itself.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to, I'm going to watch back. I'm going to get my popcorn ready and I'm going to stand back and watch you go through KiCad because I know there's more in store for you here.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I'm interested to see if you kind of come to the conclusion that you can accept a program with all of its warts. And I'm saying that because every program has warts. Or are you going to go find another one that has the warts that you're comfortable with? Like, I really want to know like where you land on this. I've used KiCad a handful of times at previous contract manufacturers. I've had to do some slight board manipulation. And in one situation, I did all of the panelization for one customer. And so that was full on board duplication with adding PCB rails and things like that. And I did it with no experience on KiCad. And within a day, I had a PCB duplicated with all of its outputs going correctly. And to be honest, I find that to be, that is a success in my opinion. If I can go from not using software to getting exactly what I want in one workday, that's good. I think that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But I did go, you know, previous to that, I've had, you know, 10 years of experience in EDA tools. So I knew the kind of words to look for and I knew the kind of things. I knew what my output was before I even started. It's just how do you connect the dots to do it? And KiCad did have a handful of very frustrating things that with enough experience wouldn't be frustrating, but having no experience were just, they seemed mind-boggling to me, where it was like, what? Like, why would you do it this way? Or why is this direction positive? Or why are my numbers looking the way they are kind of thing? Like,
yeah, where upper left is negative, negative.
Yeah.
For X and Y.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it being what it's built on is really old graphics. It's really old graphics engine. That's why.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know what's funny? That doesn't bother me.
It doesn't? Okay.
I think it's really weird, but it doesn't bother me at all.
Ah, that kills me.
Probably because I've been used to it for 10 years at Macrofab.
you've just done it enough, right?
I remember writing the first KiCad parser for Macrofab. This is 9 years ago at this point.
Right.
And being like, why are all the outputs negative? Like for the placements, all the outputs are negative in the Y. And that's why.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to go and basically pull the size of the board and find the origin and do a bunch of math. Anyways.
Shift things around.
Shift things around, yeah.
I don't know.
Before we leave, so this is the next thing is I'm trying to figure out on KiCad is So I've already made parts, and so I'm going to start, I got to finish up designing some more parts, but then I'm going to start doing layout and schematic work. Is there like a component, like on the schematic, is there like a schematic origin or anything like that? Like, it's really, really hard to select symbols. Like, you just can't click on them.
It's like Eagle, right? You got to find the one magic spot where it allows you to select
things. Yeah, but so with an Eagle, I designed all the parts, so I know where the magic spot's at. doesn't seem to be a magic spot, like an origin. That's what Eagle calls it. It calls it an origin.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be a magic. And actually, they fixed that. Like, you can kind of just click on the part now in Eagle.
Yep.
That was like an Eagle 8 thing. So that's been fixed for a while, but yes, that was very annoying. You had to know the magic location on Eagle, but in KiCad, it seems like you just have to like select with the bounding box over the part to reliably click on it.
That's a good way of putting it. How do you reliably get what you're wanting?
Yeah, I haven't really figured that out in KiCad yet. Maybe someone in the comments will be like, Parker, you just do it this way. I'm like, okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll probably make a tweet about it tonight. And then have like 40 people be like, this is the way you do it.
Probably. I need to pay more attention to your tweets when it comes to this, because I want to see how the second you ask a question, how does the community respond to that? Are they responding like, here's how you do it, idiot? Or, yeah, this is a little bit goofy, here's how you do it? Or
some of them are, it's interesting. And by the way, I'm going to be super thankful for everyone that has responded on Twitter and helping me out on this, because it's been super helpful. But I have noticed there's a difference. Some people say it's goofy, and some people say this is the workaround. Or like, I did have someone say, they just basically said, I don't see the value of whatever I was talking about. And I'm like, well, that's a great way to get me not interested in the software.
I don't see the value of selecting components on a schematic.
It wasn't for that. It wasn't for that at all. But it reminded me of trying to learn Ubuntu ages ago and the whole like Linux form thing where like, it just works for me if you just do it this one weird way. And I'm like, but that's a workaround for, that's not a real process. It's a workaround process. The people who say, yes, it's goofy, seem to be, if you go to their profiles, they're more like industry. They're like us. They're trying to build boards for companies and that kind of stuff. Whereas the people who have kind of just accepted it, and this is interesting, are academic.
Ooh, okay.
And what's interesting is what plays into that, me thinking that too, is CERN, who's a big academic research facility over in Europe, does a lot of funding and development work on KiCad.
Right.
So it actually makes a lot of sense, where in the industry we care way more about getting it done right the first time so that you can scale it faster and build your product faster. Whereas in academics, you're probably building onesie twosies of stuff. And if you have to do a green wire, so what? You just put a green wire and it goes into quote production and it's running your like centrifuge or whatever.
Okay. That's a really interesting mindset or an interesting analysis of what you're seeing. So I fit in the industry category of what you're talking there. I see EDA tools as exactly that. They're a tool. They get the job done, but I'm not going to spend time in them. Like if I go to my toolbox and I get a wrench out, I'm getting that wrench to go accomplish a task and then I put the wrench away. I want to know that I can go to my toolbox, I can get the wrench and it wrenches. It does the wrench thing, right? And then I put it away and I want to know that the next time I go to that toolbox, it's gonna do the wrench thing, right? That's how my EDA tool is and how I view it. Whereas perhaps there's this, I don't know, perhaps there's just a different mentality on what the tool is actually supposed to do.
This is some of the comments I was talking back and forth with people online about it, is EDA tools or just the tool in general should be set up to maximize the success of the operation you're trying to do, right? When you pull that wrench, it better not screwdrive.
Right.
It's a wrench. It's a wrench.
It's a wrench. It's a wrench. And before I went and grabbed it out of the toolbox, I knew it was a wrench and it's not changing, right?
Yeah. Well, that it's not, I'm saying it's not wrenching is when you use the tool, your outcome is it wrenched the thing together, right?
Right.
It didn't screw it together or do something else. The success was built into the tool, so to speak. And that's these couple problems I've run into in KiCad. The reason why I bring them up is because there are workarounds that don't guarantee the success of the designing this new device in KiCad, this component. Mm-hmm. It's not indicative to success. PokeYoke is a really good example of like, there is one process to build something correctly, or the only way something goes together. Like, right.
You are prevented from making the mistake.
Prevented from making the mistake. And that is something that I don't see a lot of in KiCad structure and workflows. And that's why I'm looking at other options to basically, once I learn KiCad, going past it and going, trying something else out. That's the whole reason why. And you know what? It might be I end up back and be like, well, I just won't share my designs anymore.
That's true, because that was one of the main drivers initially of why you were even looking at KiCad.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for listening to Circuit Break from Macrofab. We are your hosts, Parker Dillman
and Stephen Craig.
Later, everyone.
Take it easy. Thank you, yes, you, our listener, for downloading our podcast. Tell your friends and coworkers about the Circuit Break podcast. If you have a cool idea, project, or topic you want us to discuss, let Parker and I and the community know. Our community, where you can find personal projects, discussion about the podcast, and engineering topics and news, is located at forum.macrofab.com.